Right now at Honda, find your kind of value with a low finance rate offer on selected Civic hatch and sedan models. There's never been a better time to get into a Civic. So talk to your local dealer and let's help you into a Honda today. T's and C's apply. Ends August 31st. See website for details.
You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Good morning, Australia, and a very special warm welcome to those brave men and women of the various police graffiti task forces around the country who are definitely listening to this week's podcast. We trust you enjoyed your weekend. You are listening to the Batuta Advocate News Hour here on Desert Rock FM, recording live from the Koala Sofa Studios here in the heart of our town's UNESCO World Heritage listed Old City District. As usual, this project has been uploaded to the internet for our listeners outside the Channel Country as well. I'm Errol Parker.
And I'm Clancy Overall. Hello, readers. For those of you in the convict states, we hope your heads aren't hurting too much after last night's State of Origin Game 2 showdown. Always an enjoyable time, win or lose. Where did you watch the match, Errol?
I was in the waiting room of the Royal Batuta Hospital maternity ward, as you know, Clancy.
Wait up, I didn't know that.
My daughter, Stella Clancy, my youngest daughter, who's also, funnily enough, your goddaughter, if you remember. She gave birth to a baby boy last night. They named him Sebastian, which kind of irked me because that was the name that I always wanted to give a son of mine if I had one. But, you know, as you know as well, I was only gifted, by the grace of God, two daughters.
If you don't mind me asking, who was it with?
You know him too. He's that slack-jawed, marginally employed bloke she's been seeing for a while, known around the traps as Elvis, but his birth name was indeed Colin.
Elvis. I didn't know he was still on the scene.
Yeah, he's still on the scene, and he's been on the scene long enough to give me a bastard grandson, and he's going to stay on the scene too, Clancy, if he knows what's good for him.
Well, all the best to him and her. And the bub, and I guess you as well. Are they living with you?
Yeah, you know, like most young people these days, they've shacked up with their parents. We've had to board up the back veranda into some sort of makeshift nursery. You know, it's enough to keep the light frost off this time of year, but by God, it's colder than the Queen's mum's big toe down there in her grave of an early morning when the frost comes down there in the hours before sunrise. The neighbours, however, say they're nigh on calling docs, they told me this morning, but I was quick to tell them that all those highly developed socialist leftist nations such as Denmark that we lost to, in my opinion, on Friday night, I think that a draw is a loss. It should be considered a loss in my book. Anyway, countries like Denmark and Sweden and Norway and
Scandinavia
and Finland, yeah, you know, all those Scano-Blondo countries, they leave their babies out in the snow all the time, so I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
It'll tough them up, your first boy.
Yeah, well, they're the countries that everyone in the Western Hemisphere always tries to model themselves off, aren't they? You know, like, they're like the friend that you have at school that your mother always compares you to. They're always the good child. They're the ones who never act up like you do. Anyway, they've moved into my place. They've moved into my study. So my novel's gone on hold for the moment. So I'm having to use that as an excuse to not get the second draft off to the editor. And they've also been kind enough to put a few avocados there in the kitchen, which I'm not allowed to touch.
Yes, yes. It sounds like an empty nest of 0.2. It's a very common household in Australia in this current economy. Good luck to, good luck. And it's probably a better time than any to recommend that you visit our friends at Koala. They can sort you a mattress or a sofa in a couple of hours, Errol. Just visit koala.com. We do have a discount code here for $200 off. That's Struth 200, Struth 200, for $200 off your Koala sofa or Koala mattress. I'm sure you need to get them a bed.
I'm of the opinion that a Koala mattress is too good for this bag of shit that is my soon-to-be son-in-law. Anyway, I get chills each morning when I come out into the living room and see him sleeping bare-ass on my late great-aunt's futon. you know, my uncle, one of your mentors, actually, he was conceived on that futon. It's a family heirloom. There's more double helixes of Parker family DNA on that futon than there are strands of hair on the floor of a New Delhi barbershop, Clancy.
Gross. That whole, everything you just said was gross. And moving on, this week's guest is a renegade street artist, muralist and graffiti artist. He's made headlines right around the country and around the world for his artwork. The Christians don't much like him, Errol, and neither do any of the politicians. He's legally grey murals have fired shots at Palaszczuk government officials, Palaszczuk herself, Bill Shorten, Abbott, and George Pell, and that's just the political stuff he's done.
Yes, the maniac that is Scotty Marsh is joining us in the studio for an interview, but before we delve into that world of at-risk young men with spray cans jangling around in their backpacks, we should take a moment, Clancy, to discuss the at-risk men with face tattoos. Big, big, big news coming out of the Dolphins this week.
Yes, yes. Our storied terracotta and navy footballers, the Batuta Dolphins, have signed a star player from the East. As of Sunday, our first grade side will be graced with the elegant footwork and gap-finding expertise of a troubled city kid. And bear with me here. I believe it is L'Alessio Prince, who's made his way out from one of the cities in the East. He's tried his luck in Japan. He's tried his luck in Bush League, you know, further east. He's tried it. He's had a start at several clubs. He's actually a bit too much of a live wire, but, you know, as the saying goes at the Batuta Dolphins, we'll have him. And with that, the Dolphins are doing actually quite well this season with their little 22-10 win over Baduri on the weekend. We haven't seen a margin like that in some time.
Been a while, hasn't it?
For the listeners outside of town, we should give a little bit of a context about this club and just what it means to our town. Now, the origins of the Batuta RLFC Rugby League Football Club date back to 1816, when the first Northern English convicts made their way to the Diamantina and began living alongside the local indigenous people and the Afghan Camelias.
Yes, most of them were from the northern town of Huddersfield, home of the Burgess brothers, who found a home down there in Sydney's cosmopolitan Redfern district. It was around that time when Australian Rugby League went from being an infantile game for rugby union mutineers to an institutionalised national pastime, providing opportunities for at-risk and badly behaved young men. The Batuta Dolphins jersey, which is suitable for both winter and summer months, it's a good, intelligent, smart, breathing wool and cotton blend. It can be made yours in a matter of working days. Join our humble Western Queensland town as we chase victory in the Channel Country Rugby League this year and look to raise the shield that hasn't sat on the shelves of our clubhouse mantelpiece since 1967, the year after we changed from pounds and pence to dollars and cents. It's been that long.
Yes, yes. You can pick up a player's jersey yourself. Just visit www.batutaoutfitters.com.au.
And then follow the links from there. All right, I can see Scotty Marsh there. I'll just have to pull you up there, Clancy. He's waving at me through the glass. Hello, Scotty. All right, for those listeners in the Northern Territory and South Australia, we'll be going to a short ad break before we go to Scott. Please stay tuned for Scotty Marsh.
For those local listeners in town and those tuning in around the world via our syndicated radio broadcast in the United Kingdom and the United States, plus our new podcast listeners, there probably won't be an ad. Just an awkward pause that the station stitches these two segments together. Well, here we are with Scotty Marsh, arguably Australia's answer to Banksy, Australia's answer to Warhol, if Warhol had a habit of taking his work outdoors and evading authorities while he painted it. We are here with Scotty Marsh, mural artist, graffiti extraordinaire. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming down, Scotty.
No problem.
He's just been putting up a few panels on a few silos out in the backcountry, so it was good that we could catch this nationwide graffiti vandal, I guess, but also, iconic mural artist who's, you've put up a number of walls around the country, made a lot of headlines of late. He actually did one for us, didn't he, Errol?
Yeah, he did do one of us a while back, didn't he?
Up in Brisbane in Fortitude Valley.
That one, yeah, when you painted over that fucking Lister. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. I didn't get to finish it, unfortunately. The Queensland Jacks came and shut
me down.
So, tell us a little bit about that. That particular wall you did in Brisbane was an article of ours. I mean, you pretty much got all the way there. You were on the finishing touches when the police pulled up,
and yeah.
It was probably because Palaszczuk, Nanastasia, the Premier of Queensland, had sent the fuzz down there to stop you.
Yeah, it was funny because I was there for 5 days writing all the texts.
An entire Batuta Advocate article. entire article.
It was like a whole lot of fun. Mm. Because you write it in chalk first and then you write it with paint. So I got to write it twice.
Yeah.
but yeah, the second I started painting Anastasia within an hour, the judge really? Was down there, yeah. Which was kind of interesting.
It's almost like Joe's back. Yeah. You know? Joe's running the show again, you know?
Yeah. Protesters will be arrested or shot. Now, you started in graffiti, putting up panels, I guess you could say.
Yep.
Trains?
So my background, I guess, is in traditional graffiti, you'd call it, painting trains, doing illegal stuff that the guy that A Current Affair likes to blow up about every 6 months,
yep.
Bloody taxpayer dollars, rudder. So yeah, I guess I was that guy once upon a time, and then that's kind of evolved into what I do now.
You commercialized it with real money.
Yeah, well, started painting pictures instead of words.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to ask you what your first tag was, but how prolific were you in your area before you decided to make the jump from scratching, you know, 8 letters into a bus window and opposed to sort of becoming more political?
Well, I'll tell you what my first tag was, actually. I was 12 years old and I come back from school holidays and someone had just destroyed my school with Cope tags. There's a legendary graffiti writer from New York who writes Cope, but it's not him, obviously.
Yeah. So it's not pretending to be. So it's essentially like writing Banksy everywhere. Yeah.
And just instantly I was attracted to it. I was like, that's dope. I don't know what it is. Had no idea what graffiti was, but just went home, started scribbling in my books. And then the next day started writing Bope.
Bope. All right.
Which everyone at school used to tell
B-O-P-E.
Me it stood for bum, open, penis, enter. Because graffiti was very cool back then.
Yeah, right. So you you kind of took inspiration from the New York graffiti artist who, and in turn, the person who was pretending
I guess
to be
that's,
him.
I guess that's a roundabout way of putting it.
I was biting, I guess.
So was that you first started putting that around the school? And then I guess that's not necessarily too illegal in the scheme of things. Well, it is, in a way, it is criminal damage, I suppose, in the eyes of the law. But when did you decide to make the transition from being a schoolyard vandal to being a more fully fledged type of vandal?
I don't know. I'm trying to think back to then. You know, I was doing graffiti from that moment when I was in year five or something like that. You know, all through my kind of early mid 20s or whatever,
yeah.
through my teens. It was something I took super seriously. It was the only thing I did. Like when my mates were out partying and going out at 2 a.m. in the morning or something like that, I'd be like sitting in a bush looking at a security guard walk back and forth in front of a train waiting for, you know, a time to paint for 10 minutes or something like that. Those days are kind of behind me. But I don't know. It's an all-consuming kind of hobby. And I guess art is the only thing that I've found that can really fill...
Yeah.
That thing, it's really addictive, and that's why people, you know, they get caught and they just keep painting again the second they get,
can you explain that psyche? Because for all the things that you should be worried about your teenage kid doing, for some reason painting a lovely, colourful, series of words, I guess it is vandalism, but that is grouped up there with dealing drugs and all kinds of shit that teenagers get up to. What do you think it is that makes people want to be so illegally artistic?
It's fun.
Yeah.
and it's more about, you know, or especially these days now that it's a lot harder. It's a lot more about, I guess, one, a community. You're part of a kind of underground, I guess, community and subculture. And two, it's a lot more about the planning and the organizing of painting. You know, you might spend 3 days organizing something and making sure it's all good to paint and then paint for 10 minutes. So, it's something that, I don't know, there's something addictive about it. It's hard to explain to people who aren't involved in it, but anyone who's a graffiti writer will tell you that it's just a lot of fun, I guess.
So just going back, I'm assuming that you have sort of felt the cold, hard steel of a pair of handcuffs around your wrists for your art. If you can, what was your first arrest like? You know, how you had to go back and talk to your parents about being arrested, and how did that, like, did that spur you on, or did that kind of make things seem a bit realer?
Well, it's one of those things that, I guess, when you're really painting a lot of graffiti, you're going to get busted eventually.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how organized or how careful you are. Luck's, like, always a factor, and your luck runs out eventually. Especially, you know, imagine you're robbing servos.
Yeah.
You robbed 4 servos a week.
Yep.
how long do you reckon that would last?
That's a hell of a habit. Like,
but it's obviously not the same amount. A lot of the time there is the same amount of investigation these days that goes into it, but it's that kind of thing. So eventually you're going to get busted. I got busted a few times. I guess that's just part of the way it goes. It just kills your mojo for a little bit, and then you finish court and you're back out there.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking goals.
So there is, you've been around, you know, you've been, you, you, people in your industry refer to it as a spraycation, you know, mm-hmm. when you go somewhere else, you go to another city, go suss it out, go mm-hmm. go meet the scene there. I mean, you've been overseas. Have these convictions prevented you from doing anything, or are they just, they're section 10 or lower?
If you have been convicted of anything.
Yeah, I don't think they, I think the thing with America, everyone's scared that you can't get into America if you have a criminal record.
Yeah.
Tick no.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of friends who have serious criminal records that just tick no and they go straight in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
Tick no, you idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, but, you know...
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, I don't know. They just send you home. Fuck, whatever.
Can you run us through how that would happen? Say you pulled up into... Oh, you've pulled up into Batuta. You want to get to know some of the locals... you know, some of the local writers around here.
The Great Wall of Batuta.
How do you do that? Do you got online magazines? How like in any city, you know, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, if you pull up there?
Well, you know, you got social media these days. So, And like I said, you're part of a community. It really is a global community.
Yep.
You can go to any country in the world and, you know, you can find someone to take you out painting, to hang out with you, show you the city. And then in return, you know, you return the favor when they come here. I guess it's like anything. My dad used to be into Scottish country dancing.
Your old man?
Yes, he was a bit of a dog. But he used to always tell me that he was part of the Scottish country dancing community.
Yeah.
And whenever I'd travel, he'd try and link me up with his Scottish country dancing friends to let me stay on their
look after my boy.
I'm right, but it's the same thing, you know? There's a shit community for everything.
Don't worry, Dad. I'm staying with some guys in a warehouse, and we're going to go do illegal graffiti overnight. So
his backpack's very noisy.
So, can you tell us a little bit about some big names in that world before we get into your actual commissioned and your actual a lot of your work isn't commissioned actually, but a lot of your murals and stuff. Well, before we get that, we'll just go into that scene a little bit more. Are there any big names? Is Australia on the map in this world?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah? Australia is hugely on the map in terms of train painting. I think like a lot of the top guys in the world are from Australia. I don't know, it's something about Australians because we're so far away. When we travel somewhere, especially Europe, places like that, we stay there for a long time and we juice the most out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's always been, I guess, traditionally difficult. So you go over there and you're just like, fucking yeah. And you're used to cut six. So, yeah. And also, like, within the street art community and the mural community globally, a lot of the thing that people don't, I guess, realize is that I always get, oh, your mural looks awesome, but I hate those fucking taggers. But, you know, I was a fucking tagger. So were like all the top kind of tier guys in street art and the guys whose work I like the most and the guys who most people's work they like the most. They all have share the same kind of background as me, but they just don't really talk about it very much, I guess. Because I've been discouraged to talk about it by kind of gallery type people and art people. But, you know, it's part of my story. So, and it's really has been the most important thing in my life, so if I wasn't talking about it, I'd just be full of shit.
Yeah. Are there any cities in Australia that stand out?
Melbourne is a global graffiti city.
Yeah.
It's on, you know, on the, I guess, similar to cities like Berlin and I guess New York now to a lesser extent, but Buenos Aires is another one.
So the cops are more tolerant of
not really, it's just got a really rich graffiti culture that's gone back a long way. Like Sydney's got a really rich culture as well, so is Brisbane. But something about Melbourne, especially their there's a lot more street stuff in Melbourne.
A lot more alleyways.
Yeah, a lot more alleyways. But they don't tend to clean it off as hard, so it gets a chance to kind of blossom, I guess.
Yeah. I remember briefly in the early 2000s, Queensland police had an actual graffiti enforcement. Like they actually had a
every
unit.
Every city has that. They
got every city had that?
Yeah.
There was, it was hysterical in Brisbane for a while because there was a particular...
Josh Mars?
No, Soffles.
Yeah, Soffle, yeah.
A writer who's
Josh
now...
Mars was the head of the unit that was chasing
him. Oh, right. Oh, that was the cop chasing him. Yeah, you know the cop's name.
He was off the clock. He was off the clock to run around in his pajamas trying to catch people.
Yeah, right.
Legend.
Because some of those guys that came out of Brisbane are some of the first kind of street art guys that have made that transition in social media. Soffles being one of them. So what happens there? Is there any... Do the graffiti artists ever get encouraged by cops or just to, you know, hey guys, why are you running from us all night? Or, you know, do you ever get that encouragement to steer that into, you know, a career or?
Not really, but those kind of junctions, I guess, in your life. I know for Soffles, he was in the media when he got busted. It was a bit of a big deal. And that meant, one, he had a whole lot of legal fees he had to pay for, and two, he couldn't really paint for a bit. So he used his energy going down that legal avenue during that period. So that was his kind of junction that went that way. I was actually living in Brisbane in a squat with Soffles, Fintan McGee, who's like another well-known street artist, and Guido Van Helton in Brisbane.
Oh, Guido does the, he does the silos, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he did that Brim. Big one of the bush. Where was that?
Brim, I think it was.
In Victoria, wasn't it?
No, no, he did one up in Western Queensland.
He's done a few.
Oh, yeah.
Canalpin, which is like on the border of South Australia.
Right.
Brim, a few others. But yeah, we were all living in like a squat thing in Brisbane in Fortitude Valley for a year. And it was that was right after Soffles had got caught. Fintan was starting to go that direction as well. Because we were all painting trains together prior to that in Brisbane. So we lived there for a year and it just so happened that all at the same time we just kind of started sending our energy towards the art stuff a bit more and to the graffiti stuff a bit less. And it's been kind of cool because we've all kind of taken that journey together. And then we've all somehow, a bunch of graffiti retards living in a squat, have become reasonably successful.
So, hypothetically speaking, how long would it take for you and a team of blokes to completely paint the size of a Cural train?
You give me four good men.
Yeah.
Anywhere between 3 minutes and as long as you have, I guess.
Yeah. So just for the listeners, some of these names of these blokes that Scotty's talking about, you know, in past tense that he might have lived with, have funny names because a lot of the time you refer to these blokes by their actual tag.
Oh. Yeah, well, the funny thing with Fintan is he's got an Irish background. He's got the most Irish name in the universe. And everyone thinks it's a joke name, but it's actually his name.
Okay.
Guido Van Helsen's Dutch, and it's the same thing. It sounds like a joke made up street art name, but it's his actual name.
Yeah. Soffles. Soffles is a tag. No,
that's his...
But back to that question Errol just asked, what kind of stuff are you working with? I've seen fire extinguishers get used. How do you get down? Are you just up there with Dulux paint cans or
what? In terms of graffiti, or
yeah, in terms of yeah. You know, the 3 minutes or 5 minutes you need to do a whole entire side of a council train.
Or either that, or you're on the iron lax.
Oh, I just spray paint when you're doing graffiti for the most part. Mm-hmm. Unless you're trying to do something a bit up high and out of the way, maybe use roller paint or a fire extinguisher or something.
So fire extinguisher, you just jam.
Fill it with paint and then you fill the PSI up and you just blast it.
That's a lot of paint.
It's dangerous. You don't want to do it inside because occasionally they can kind of blow up and make a bit of a mess.
Yeah, right.
I was once staying at a guy's house in Poland and I totaled his apartment kitchen by accident. Like, don't do it inside, please. I'm like, mate, it'll be fine. I've done this before. I haven't stayed at his house again.
Time to hit the road. Thanks for having. Give me a yell next time you're in Australia.
I think one thing that we do need to cover is I think a lot of our listeners and readers would know you from some of the more politically charged murals you've done down there in the harbour capital of Sydney. Most recently, the Richard Di Natale on the back of some pub down there in County Newtown, which was painted over probably, arguably, your most controversial recent piece of Cardinal George Pell and former Prime Minister Tony Abbott there in a bit of a erotic situation.
Reach around.
Post plebiscite,
Pete, and that was actually it was scrubbed or buffed. I think was the term that you used.
Yeah, I think it copped at first. I think within 2 hours of me actually finishing it, it copped a bucket of white paint on Mr. Pell's face, which I thought was very funny and very topical.
Yeah.
thanks for coming. And then the next night, a group of blokes rocked up and basically staunched everyone at the pub and just rolled the whole thing black.
Yeah. So that was, for the listeners who might not be familiar with this particular mural that Scotty did, it was just after the results of the plebiscite had come through where we'd found that...
Yeah, so the plan... Well, a little bit of backstory. So I painted a mural of Tony Abbott marrying himself during the plebiscite in Redfern. And I had a few different concepts that I wanted to paint. The second one after that was Tony on his hen's night in drag, which I thought was kind of funny, drinking pinos out of a penis straw.
Hen's party.
And so literally the night before I was painting it, like God himself had come down and spoken to me and whispered in my ear, you know, what do they have at hen's party, Scott? And I was like, male strippers. And then I just thought of adding Pell like last minute, and he kind of got in there.
Cardinal Pell.
Yeah. That one kind of evolved while I was painting it, I guess. So Pell got added. The title was a suggestion from someone passing by, the happy ending. And then just the way it was painted, the hand was going down the front, so I thought it was appropriate, you know, for Tony to be breaking the no-touching rule.
Yeah.
And put his hands down the front of his sluggos. That was the line, I think.
So it was the depiction of Tony Abbott. It was Tony Abbott's hand that was indeed down the front of Cardinal Pell's,
the highest ranking Catholic clergyman in Australia, getting a hand job
his hand on the cock of God.
exactly right on the shaft.
And that blew a lot of heat behind that in terms of that area's Catholic or Christian community, and like you said, painted over within hours.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that area's community. A lot of the people in that community, Christians, had messaged me saying how they were kind of embarrassed about how it all went, and they wanted to. There was one church group that offered to help me repaint the mural, which was very nice of them. But
it was a bit more devout.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was the emotion behind what had happened. You know, so those groups that had taken a bit of an L in the plebiscite. We're not super happy, and there's a lot of emotion around the event. And in Newtown, you know, it was kind of expressed with people just happy as fuck.
Mm.
But in some areas, not so much.
Well, we did read in the newspaper that the pub did receive a bit of backlash for that mural. I was just wondering if you yourself received any as well.
Yeah, I got a lot of death threats and hate mail. I had quite a few people who were posing as clients wanting to buy works and come to my studio, which after a bit more research ended up to be concreters / motorbike enthusiasts / Christians.
Yeah.
that's an interesting way in. Hello, I would like to buy one of your paintings.
Yeah, I've got somewhere I want you to paint a mural.
So do you think if they came over, do you think they would be willing to break a few of their 10 commandments to be right in the eyes of God?
Maybe they wanted to read me a Bible passage or get me to change my ways.
I guess we'll all die wondering then, won't we?
Yeah.
Machine gun preachers.
Man, there was one bloke who actually came down while I was painting the Tony Abbott marrying himself and read me Bible passages for a good half an hour, telling me how I was going to hell and he was trying to save me. I've still got the Bible in my studio. He's highlighted. folded all the pages that I had to read as homework, which is nice of him.
So a lot of graffiti artists, while they come across and guys that venture into street art come across as kind of, you know, ratty kind of hoodlums.
Yeah.
There is an element of politics to it all. You wouldn't be alone in that, you know, you can put up in a matter of hours, a political mural just to kind of capture what you think's happening in the climate. Are many people doing that in Australia?
Not a whole lot of people are doing political work in Australia. I don't know why that is. I do know, for me, when you're trying to make a career as an artist, at some point you've got to try and make some money so you can pay your bills. And I used to reach out to galleries and different artists and stuff like that to try and, you know, get advice or whatever. And from the galleries, my feedback was generally, don't associate yourself with graffiti. People don't like graffiti. Don't paint political work. It doesn't sell. Don't paint murals. We don't sell murals. We sell paintings. And essentially, you know, everything that I do now is the opposite of what they advised me. Everything that's been successful is the opposite. So maybe that's got something to do with it. Mm. People don't want to paint political work because they can't sell it or something. Yeah. Like, I generally don't really make any money out of the political work, but it's fun. Yeah. And if it's not fun, I couldn't be fucked, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
If I wanted to do something not fun, I would have kept working at a pizza joint.
Yeah. And you come in with your own, you know, and it is refreshing to hear, like, I guess, different takes. Well, that particular one you're talking about, Abbott marrying Abbott and an Abbott giving Pell a hand job, is wildly offensive to some people. It's a refreshing kind of take coming from, you know, a different person, someone who's, you know, probably, it's a voice that people aren't usually hearing, which is just, you know, guys that kind of do panels and do different shit. It's, yeah, you're not a political commentator. You're a street artist. So, and what's interesting is you've got such different takes on different. You know, you've teed off on Pell and Abbott. You've teed off on Shorten. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that was about the Batman
by-election,
and just his kind of back and forth on the Adani project and, you know, coming into Melbourne and saying, oh, I don't know about this. And then heading out up North Queensland and saying, yeah, I'm all about it, you know. So he's trying to play it both ways, which is like some classic politics.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what that was about, really.
Yeah. There's another one I'd like to explore a bit. It's also down there in the bohemian parts of Sydney down there is the mural that got scrubbed of George Michael, where he was arguably depicted as a saint, despite being a latent homosexual.
He wasn't latent. He was very openly homosexual. The late homosexual.
Yes, yeah. I guess that's a more apt way to describe it. So that one got scrubbed too by some children of God.
Yeah, so the group behind scrubbing the Pell Abbott mural,
yep,
was a Facebook group called Christian Lives Matter. And the guy who run that basically made a call to arms about that mural, and people destroyed it. Then he had obviously looked through my Instagram to try find any other blasphemous material, which he deemed George Michael that. And so he made another call to arms, I guess, on his Facebook page, and then people just started attacking it, you know. I think there was one, I think it got attacked, what, 4 or 5 times, and it had also been attacked during the plebiscite with eggs and, like, people writing homophobic stuff on it, but it had been scrubbed off and been fixed, so no one really paid too much attention to that. But it's really close to where the other mural was, so they just kind of went there and then went down the road and messed that up. But
it wasn't a political mural, it was a tribute to it.
It was the least controversial, yeah, mural I think I've ever
it was
painted.
The
I mean, a bunch of flowers, you know.
It was about as spicy as American mustard, you could say, you know. So.
Well, it was real sad because it became like a shrine, and like people would go there and leave candles and notes and gifts for George. The owners of the building, who were actually friends with George, they would go out there and spend time with him, and it would really become like a bit of a shrine for people to kind of celebrate his life and remember him. And it had nothing to do with religion. You know, that the image of someone as a saint with a gold halo around their head has been reappropriated like 10,000 times. I think I saw Snoop Dogg as...
Yeah.
Yeah. People do it with footballers all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jordan,
so the claim was that it was the Sacred Heart, that image of Jesus with his hands up or whatever, which it wasn't actually. It was from, you know, I always researched a bit into these murals, so
yeah.
In terms of saints, there's like 150 of them. There's saints of prostitutes, there's saints of beer, there's saints of everything. And
so are there any of
the idea was him as the patron saint of the gays. And so when I asked the guys who are friends with him, you know, what should he be holding in his hands, because you should have something from their patronage, they were like, amble and a joint, which I was like, that's fucking hilarious. 100% on that. Yeah, but they didn't like it, so they painted it black. I guess that's the beautiful thing about, you know, art in a public space as opposed to a gallery. If you don't like it, you can just throw shit at it.
Is there a patron sort of saint of graffiti artists?
There isn't. I should make one. I guess it would be someone like Scene.
Scene? But, or Banksy? Actually, who was...
It wouldn't be Banksy.
What's the thoughts on Banksy? I mean, he has made a lot of money through pretty much coming from similar beginnings as you and a lot of your mates. Does anyone know what's going on there? Like, he is actually, in the eyes of the media, still very much anonymous.
I'm not sure. I don't know too much about him, to be honest with you. Like, I like his work. Graffiti writers get, there's this kind of, I guess it's, I compare it to skiers versus snowboarders.
Yeah.
It's like graffiti artists versus street artists. You know, they're both pretty much the same thing, but for some reason they just want to butt heads all the time.
Yeah.
So they're just competing over, I guess, the same space or something. So he gets a lot of hate from that kind of community, but whatever. He's doing cool stuff. People, you know, can relate to it. They like it. They get enjoyment out of it. Enjoy it.
Now, Palaszczuk, where did the drive... I mean, and that's where we first kind of came in contact with you, when you... You jumped on an article we'd written, which was about Palaszczuk.
And the reef.
And the reef. So we'd done an article saying, Anastasia Palaszczuk has said that she'll sort out the bleaching of the reef once she sorts out the graffiti in the city, which then made a great mural for you. And like you said, you had to write the entire article. Did a bit of sub-editing for us as well. Thank you.
Yeah.
across, you know, what, three stories in Fortitude Valley in Brisbane.
It was a massive wall. It was maybe the biggest wall I think I've ever painted.
Yeah. It was over the top of a lister. And I don't know about you, but we did receive a lot of letters and a lot of emails and some phone calls regarding the vandalism of that lister piece. I was just wondering if you ever got any words hurled at you from through that chain link fence there.
A few people mentioned it, but the lister piece was already kind of had graffiti stuff all over it. But I called him before and just said, "Hey, mate, heads up, I want to paint this mural over this spot." It's a spot that has a high turnaround. Like, I think he paints it pretty regularly, a few times a year or something like that.
Well, now there's
a... Where it was just like, yeah, man, go for it, good luck. And that was the end of that, you know.
So you guys do that. You do contact each other and say, hey, I think your thing's looking a bit weary now. I'm going
to... Yeah, I'd like to paint over it. Yep. Like, if you're looking for a space, and then, you know, if there's... Like, cool, go for it, I guess.
And so with that mural, Palaszczuk, where did your beef with her begin?
Well, it started with the Adani project. So when I was younger, I was lucky enough to do a few trips to the Barrier Reef with some family friends. And we'll go snorkeling and do some spearfishing and other stuff around there. And man, it is the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And I've been lucky enough to travel a lot. And, you know, once finding out what's going on with the Adani project and the environmental stuff around it and the coral bleaching, you know, I was just fired up. So I was painting a lot of murals about that project. I'm painting quite a few now, I think, like 4 or 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'll probably keep painting them as it keeps going, I guess. It's kind of gone quiet now for a little bit, but they seem to think that it's still going to go ahead.
Yeah. So you had one mural, which was Palaszczuk holding a gun to Nemo's head from Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Very emotive artwork, that one, in the middle of Brisbane.
I had a few, like, parents with their young kids walk past and the kids are like, she's shooting Nemo.
I'd imagine the coppers were down there pretty
No, that pretty one quick actually smile wasn't on that really one. Painted with permission.
Oh, right.
I just kind of did it. It was on the side of the Greens building, but that just gave a bit more context, I think.
Yeah.
And it was actually directly opposite the cop shop.
Yeah,
but right. I realised halfway through the time I was painting, I was like, why is there so many fucking cops behind me all the time? And I realised there was a cop shop behind me.
That's a good recon by you.
Yeah, but if you've got a bunch of ladders and buckets of paint and shit, you look like you've got permission.
So yeah, right.
Yeah.
And did you get any actual blowback, apart from the cops on those murals you've done throughout Queensland, did you get any bites from the top, straight, you know, from the Queensland government?
I think she did comment on it in one article. I think she said something like, I've got too much time on my hands or something like that.
Yeah.
I've got all the time in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about Nolsey.
So I just gave Cronulla the big Nolsey. You know, Nambour has the big pineapple, Ballina has the big prawn, and now Cronulla has the big Nolsey.
Yeah, it's the classic pose of him pulling his shirt to the side and pointing to the Southern Cross tattoo over his heart.
Yeah. Shannon Noll.
Yes.
That's one I thought was appropriate. I don't know, I found his Facebook, somehow I ended up on Shannon Noll's Facebook, and the comments on his images were just too fucking funny. I was laughing for ages. I was like, I've got to paint Nolsey. I've got to paint Nolsey in the Shire. And then, yeah, that was the image that I kind of stuck with. It was good. He kind of went down and got a selfie in front of it. He was a real good sport about it. Seems like a bit of a champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun.
Now, we got to ask, for you street artists, former graffiti artists, is there ever a time when you blokes, when you might be overseas, might not be in Australia doing these things, where you just like therapeutically need to go out back to where it all began?
Yeah, it's good for the soul.
Yep.
Graffiti's good for the soul. That's what I say to, you know, a lot of my friends.
But the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just give me a break, guys. It's good for the soul. But, yeah, I'm not doing too much of it these days. But, yeah, it would be nice to, you know, put the fingers on a few spray cans every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I'm just so busy as well. I don't really have the time to do it. The art stuff's really taking up a lot of my time. And I'm not a good multitasker at all. So I can only do one thing at a time, really. Like, if I've got one meal job on, I just cancel everything else that's going on and just, I have to hone in, otherwise I can't do it.
Yeah, right. And do you, with that underground scene, would you ever meet someone who, you know, might be hiding in plain sight, someone wearing a suit saying, you know, I know your work, you know, people that are familiar with graffiti, even though, like, someone who's been a part of that community, do you run into people like that around the place?
Yeah, I think within that community, a lot of the people kind of recognise who my past, they kind of know what's going on. They enjoy it, and I don't know, it's been cool, I guess, for me, because graffiti's been such a big part of my life, and the work that I make in the studio, a lot of it's about, I guess, graffiti and my time graffiti. The tools that I use, I learnt doing graffiti. So I owe it, I feel like, a kind of bit of a debt of gratitude, and that's why I kind of try to, I guess, change people's ideas about, you know, oh, fucking taggers. But what people have to understand that come up to me and say, I hate tags, but I love murals, is the tags, like the seed or whatever, and the mural's the big tree with all the flowers on it. And every part of that evolution is important, because if, you know, I started with the tag and now I'm doing those murals that you like so much.
So just writing letters is how it all begins, writing a certain word that you kind of go by.
Yeah, well, it's like if everyone who, you know, drew stupid pictures on their notepad at home started drawing those stupid pictures all over other people's property, you'd fucking hate drawing. You know, drawing stupid, those drawing pricks.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing when you've got a bunch of young kids, you know, doing graffiti and writing their names or their tags or stuff all over the place where you can see it, and they're probably not very good at it, especially in the early days. And a lot of the guys that are really, really prolific, usually quite young and like full of beans, and they're out there just riding on everything. So that's where you see the most. And that's where people, I guess, get the shits with it. But in terms of tags, you know, it's just typography. There's a lot of artists who just do tags who are very successful that sell their work for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars around the world.
Yeah.
And it looks awesome, but it's because they're doing, I guess, good tags.
Yeah. Well, with that, Scotty, do you have any advice for any young kids that are in school and considering breaking into a train yard overnight with a couple cans of iron lac and putting up panels? What would your advice be to the young kids?
You know, I'm not going to tell anyone to not do graffiti because I did it and I like it, I guess.
And it's fucking fun.
And it's fucking fun, mate. But I'm also not going to tell them to do it, you know. Be safe and be careful. It's the main thing, especially if you're running around near trains and on the rail corridor. Really, you have to pay attention and keep your wits about you, because you can get hit by a train and you fucking die. So
you probably shouldn't have your headphones in.
Yeah, definitely don't have your headphones in, and just don't be drunk and don't be like chatting with your mates and talking shit and being a bit of a goose. Yep. Take it seriously, because that's where you get into trouble.
And never talk to cops.
Yeah, never talk to cops, mate.
Never talk to cops.
Snitches get stitches. No.
As soon as those handcuffs are on your wrists, don't say another word.
Don't sing, mate.
Until you've got a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Say, I want to see my lawyer for this.
No, because these cops, you know, they
trespassing offence.
These cops, they will pretend to be your mate. They'll just say, oh, mate, you know, oh.
They will, bro.
We catch you all the time, and they fucking go on about all the shit with the cops.
What type of spray paint do you love? Oh, I love that type of spray paint. You love that type of spray paint?
Turn the chair around backwards.
Yeah.
The worst chat I've ever heard in my life.
I think I saw your tag up on the north side. It's like, no, you didn't, cunt.
Well,
righto, thanks, Scotty, mate. Just coming up the top of the hour.
We'll finish with a quote from Simon and Garfunkel, which actually I feel like endorses Graffiti Artists for the Kids, saying Scotty won't officially do it. And the words of the prophet were written on the subway walls. Is that, yeah, that's kind of what inspired a lot of you kids, was the music of Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's where it all started.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, Scotty.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
And on the way out, if you could try not to scratch your tag into any windows or...
I've already fucked up your bathroom.
Have you? All right.
Looks like an Aussie hip-hop gig in there.
Yeah. Thanks, Scotty. And that was Scotty Marsh. Coming up to the top of the hour, we've run out of time once again. Stay tuned for the news bulletin with Bruce Hitchcock, followed by Hello Sport with Tom and Ed. Until next week, my name is Errol Parker, and thank you for being with us.
I'm Clancy Overall. You be kind to each other.
Right now at Honda, find your kind of value. With a low finance rate offer on selected Civic hatch and sedan models, there's never been a better time to get into a Civic. So talk to your local dealer and let's help you into a Honda today. T's and C's apply. Ends August 31st. See website for details.